This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us in studio each Tuesday afternoon to talk about growth and development here in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good to be here.
How are you doing?
Doing well.
You rushed over here right at 5 o'clock when CBS News was on, and you were talking about, you're coming from a meeting, right?
I was out of breath because I just ran from a work session. My tape is still rolling over there, so hopefully they're carrying on without me watching. This is a Places 29 update for the Albemarle County Planning Commission. Places 29, as your listeners I'm sure know, is the master plan process for the 29 North Corridor. They're trying to outline a 20-year plan for the growth and development of that corridor.
I'm sure there's some people listening in their cars right now at this very moment who are sitting in traffic on Route 29, and they're crawling through all those stoplights. And I'm sure they're shaking their heads in agreement that they would love to see some type of workable plan for Route 29. Is there anything on the table that is appealing and looks like it might actually have some type of, you know, good effects?
Well, it's pretty interesting. I mean, they are trying to figure out ways to redevelop parts of 29 to make it a more attractive, walkable, livable community, get higher density housing and mixed use commercial residential into place in certain town centers. So you might imagine a denser area up around the airport, for example, or in what they call Midtown around the Hydraulic Road, the Rio Road intersection with 29. One of the most interesting statistics they repeated to the Planning Commission is, you know, a lot of people think we need to get the traffic off of 29, and they are right. But they may not be right in the way they think they are. A lot of people think, oh, we need a bypass around Charlottesville. And so you hear a lot of talk about the Western Bypass Project, which, frankly, is never going to happen. But what these consultants are telling the county
because of money, there's no money for it, and
money
there's a lot of people.
And the route selected was very problematic.
Yeah.
We've now grown up past where that would have terminated into Route 29. So the development up around North Point and Airport Road and Hollymead Town Center, that's all beyond where the...
Yeah, where would you pull trucks off of 29 to bypass Charlottesville?
But
it keeps
moving
up further north.
They say we don't need to buy that kind of traffic bypass because that's only 12% of the traffic on Route 29.
So only through
only
trucks?
12% is trying to get through, cars and trucks.
Really?
12%.
Interesting.
The rest of it, 64%, is purely internal trips. So in this case, a car has started and stopped within the corridor or into Charlottesville. So this urbanized area, 64% of the cars on the 29 North Corridor started and will stop within that corridor.
Wow.
The rest of the traffic is also, you know, coming into or starting from this corridor, but it's not through traffic. So this, you know, that's pretty compelling data to say instead what the consultants are recommending are these parallel road networks. So we've talked about this
before. To facilitate the majority of trips, which are just moving up or down 29.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Berkmar Drive is something that's been enhanced over the years. It starts across from Fashion Square Mall, and it curves around, crosses Rio Road, and goes up behind the Sam's Club.
Right, right. I remember when they cut the ribbon on that years ago.
And imagine if it kept on going and ran into Hollymead Town Center further up north.
That would be cool.
So that's an example of a parallel road that these planners for Places 29 are recommending.
Isn't there another parallel road on the other side down near Hydraulic? Like you can get off Hydraulic and go where the old terrace
Hillsdale Drive
movie theater is.
Hillsdale Drive will go in there. And that one is moving forward. And they're about to start having public meetings about that.
Really? Is there money for that?
Yeah, there is for that one.
But that's exciting. Where's the bell? Where's the bell? Goodness gracious. You can't find the bell when you need it. Where the heck is
ding,
the bell?
Ding, ding, ding.
I want to ring the heck out of the bell. I can't believe we have some money for a road.
That one's moving forward.
That's very exciting.
They've still got some work to do on that. But here, the other exciting thing for people stuck on 29 right now, if you are stuck, is that they are proposing six grade-separated interchanges or crossovers, overcrossings, they were calling them. So we've talked about one at Hydraulic in 29.
Oh, yeah,
but imagine them
there.
Also at Rio Road, at Ashwood, at Airport Road, at Timberwood Drive. Those are other places within the next 20 years. They are saying if you want to, you know, embark on this master plan, you're going to need to make some major improvements on the 29 corridor. One of the keys to doing that, they are saying, is putting in these grade-separated interchanges so you eliminate those traffic lights.
Yeah. At what, $25 million a pop?
They will be pricey. And that, of course, gets into another topic we want to talk about today, which is funding for transportation priorities. And I asked the lead planner on this tonight, have they put a dollar cost on those grade-separated interchanges? They've not done that yet. So at this point, it's a transportation engineering idea. They have not put the cost on it yet.
It sounds more like a Christmas list. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we had all the money in the world that we could make 29 look like this?
You know, the that's a big complaint of the public is that the road infrastructure doesn't come before development. And of course, now there's been a lot of development approved in the corridor, everything from Albemarle Place all the way to North Point, those new major developments. Hollymead Town Center is going to come in with another 1,000 homes. Those things are all going to put more cars onto this thoroughfare, and it's going to start performing worse over time, these major changes are made.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't do something, the time will come when you get in your car and it's just like Northern Virginia. It will be bumper to bumper anywhere you want to go on 29 all day long, because there's just so many people, so many new homes being built and so many people moving to the area, and they are not putting the money into the new roads, into the infrastructure. So let's continue this discussion on the other side of this break. We want to break here and get a Market Watch update about the big Dow fall today in New York. The stock market, is it a crash, a mini crash? It's a plunge. It's a correction. It's a correction. And when we get back, we'll talk about the transportation plan the General Assembly has passed and how that affects us or doesn't affect us. And the options that we have to pay for these new roads and this infrastructure as more and more people discover that this is the best place to live in America. We're talking growth and development. It is Tuesday, and every Tuesday afternoon we talk growth and development with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. If you would like to join this conversation, give us a call at 977-1070. It is a free local call, as Floyd discovered. Floyd is on the line from Albemarle. Floyd, you're on with Brian Wheeler. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Coy. First off, there's no joke about any pork barrel with Robert Byrd in West Virginia this time.
Good, because it takes me a while. It's towards the end of the day here. My brain's moving a little slow.
I know. if I don't know whether you've been around long enough or not, but back in the 80s, the city and the county got together and actually made some plans for development of roads in the area. And the county wanted the Meadow Creek Parkway to be developed, and the city wanted us to do more with 29. And one of the agreements that we got was there would be overpasses built on 29 at Westfield Road, Hydraulic, and Rio, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's the famous three-party agreement, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, including the university.
Yep.
And the only party that didn't agree to it was our Transportation Committee representative, Carter Myers, who overruled it. And we would have had those overpasses if they had not bid for him.
Wow. Brian, update us on that three-party agreement. It was an agreement the city, county, and the university all got together and sort of mapped out the priorities and sort of a roadmap for the future of transportation projects.
You're correct, Floyd. That was a major agreement. It had to do with the sequencing of steps before a Western bypass was deemed to be still necessary. So they were looking at the Meadow Creek Parkway. They were looking at these grade separated interchanges. And yeah, they are now popping back into the plans as something that is needed. Certainly the traffic estimates that I talked about earlier show that we need to alleviate traffic for these internal trips that are happening in and around the Places 29 corridor.
Floyd, why do you think Carter Myers would have vetoed all that stuff?
I just wonder whether anyone ever asked him that question. He has a business right next to where one of the overpasses would have been. I don't think it had anything to do with it, would it?
Well, I see your insinuation there. Floyd, thanks.
But I wonder if anyone ever actually asked him the question.
Why I don't
he
know.
Overruled it.
And Carter Myers explained, Brian, how he could have overruled it, because he was on the the Commonwealth Transportation
Board? The local decision makers sort of ran into a conflict with the Commonwealth Transportation Board. They are the ones that allocate the federal money and give the state money to the local MPO for it to put on these projects, and also for local governments to use. And they had a different idea in mind. They wanted to, because of pressure from Danville and Lynchburg in the General Assembly, there was a lot of pressure on the Commonwealth Transportation Board to move the Western Bypass forward. That ended up failing with a lawsuit, and it's hanging by a thread on the Virginia Department of Transportation long-range plans.
They still want to do it.
It's still there, but the only reason it's listed is because they own all this right-of-way that they purchased in the path of the Western Bypass. One of the things local people have long said is, why don't you sell that land so we can use that money? You know, let's put houses back on that property where, you know, houses should be, and let's use the revenues for some of the transportation projects we can all agree on.
Yeah, yeah.
One little insight on that, Coy. I have a friend that had some land there that was taken, and as I understand it, if they don't use it for a bypass and it gets sold back to him for what they paid him for it.
That's right. I think the original landowner has a right of first refusal on the property.
At the original price.
So it's an eminent domain issue?
Well, yeah,
or did
sure.
They...
Whether or not it was eminent domain didn't matter, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
In that case, it was eminent domain for a public road.
Well, you know, it's a darn good thing they didn't build the Western Bypass, because here in 2007, if they had built it then exactly how they wanted to, it would already be obsolete. Because
right. It wouldn't have been nice today if there was an overpass at Kmart and Hydraulic Road there.
Oh, yeah.
You got that new big development going in there on the Sperry property. Wouldn't that have made a big difference?
Well, Floyd, and we're going to be saying that a lot more as Albemarle Place comes online. I was in the county office building a couple weeks ago meeting with the engineers. They do have plans on paper now. Frank Cox is the developer of Albemarle Place. He had to figure out exactly which design the county and VDOT and the city would approve, so he could figure out where to site his buildings within that project.
Yeah.
And now
I want to give good kudos to the county. I tried to download their Places 29 maps, and it failed miserably.
Really?
So I called down there, and they sent me a complete color set of maps the next day.
Well, that's great.
Sweet.
And for the public listening, if you are having trouble on the website, these are large files, but there are a couple public meetings coming up. And I've got the dates right here. Monday, March 5th, and Thursday, March 8th are the next two public discussions. SeavilleTomorrow.org on our website. You can get to that calendar. But these neighborhood meetings are going to continue. The county is really looking for feedback. They're running, you know, big ads in the paper saying, did we get it right? The only way they're going to find out is if the public shows up or sends an email or comments on this plan.
So are they going to have an overpass at Hydraulic when Albemarle Place is built?
No, not when Albemarle Place and this road project are on two entirely different timelines at this point.
Okay. So Albemarle Place is going to go in, which means a new traffic light in front of the post office on 29.
Correct.
But it doesn't mean an overpass at Hydraulic, which everybody here knows we need.
That's right.
Another comment, if I could, Coy.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Floyd.
The city and the county were trying to get very good cooperation to get these parallel paths built up. And the most recent thing that stymied that was in the city, where that Albemarle Place is going to dump in behind the Holiday Inn, the city blockaded the street there so the traffic couldn't go through. And this followed a pattern similar to what they did back in the 80s when they were trying to build the road, which is the Hillsborough Road, behind the retirement center, which wasn't there then, behind the Fashion Mall.
Uh-huh.
They were trying to build it in the city, so they didn't want the traffic coming into the city, and so they approved Pepsi bottling plant and the retirement home to block it.
Yeah, and they're right in the way of that. But yep. The road's going to go over that. Floyd, thank you so much for the call. Love to hear from you anytime. Brian, real quick, they're still going to go ahead with that, though, right?
Yeah, Hillsdale will continue. It is going to have to go through some existing buildings.
Yeah.
and the Terrace Triple is one of them, and that will be demolished.
And the city approved that to block that road? Is that accurate, or do we know?
That is, yes, there is a traffic diverter in place. I've actually not driven there and seen it. This has been one of the controversies between the city and the county, where we've got the neighbors who live there would describe as cut-through traffic. We have the same thing with the Fry Springs neighborhood on Old Lynchburg Road, and they are now coming before the city and saying, please, cul-de-sac Old Lynchburg Road so we can stop the cut flow traffic.
Let's take one other quick call. Tom is on the line from Albemarle. Tom, go right ahead real quick.
Yeah, Brian, just a quick question. Was anything said about in 29 places, A, what the population would be, and B, what that effect would also be on other infrastructure, schools, you know, on other parks, et cetera, et cetera?
Tom, I do have those numbers for they're being very careful, of course, this time, given the experience with the Crozet Master Plan. They're now referring only to development units and number of jobs. So they some of the numbers they've given for the year 2025 are a total of 21,000 development units and 40,000 jobs. We're currently at 14,000 development units and 16,000 jobs. So that's the kind of growth they're anticipating in the time frame. But they've also put down a, as you know, in Crozet, an ultimate build-out number. They didn't really call it that, but they said the residential capacity of Places 29, which could be as high as 67,000 residential units.
On wait a minute, 67,000
within
homes
the Places 29.
Along Route 29?
Correct.
And where are we now?
14,000.
Oh, my God. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking growth and development with Brian Wheeler. And we've got a call on line one. Tom, who is on line one? Who is this? Hello?
Oh, Joshua Lafferty.
Hey, Josh. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Go right ahead.
I know we've been, you know, talking a lot in the news lately and, you know, on your show about the Places 29 and, you know, the Western Bypass, Meadow Creek Parkway. And I was just wondering if there are any, you know, real options for, you know, helping out with the traffic on Pantops, coming through Pantops area.
Boy, that's a great question. Who doesn't get stuck there? Whenever you go near Pantops, you just get stuck. It's one of the worst places, and it used to be historically. It's a great question, Josh. Used to be historically the highway out of town. I mean, it was the road out of town, which is why all the car dealerships were there because they were sort of zoned as that's way out of town. You know, that was the highway to Richmond before there was a 64. So, but now it's a neighborhood area. You know.
It's interesting. That's another place that's currently being master planned. It's called the Pantops Master Plan. The county's in the middle of that one as well. So they're sort of doing Places 29 and Pantops simultaneously. The transportation component isn't getting as much attention at Pantops, partly because it's a smaller area. There's a lot of focus on the Martha Jefferson Hospital aspect and the different uses that would be up around the hospital. I think as we think about transportation issues, certainly the Free Bridge is one of the big constricting points and an area that we have to be concerned about. One of the road projects, Joshua, that often gets talked about is something called the Eastern Connector.
That's my favorite.
The Eastern Connector.
That's what I would build first.
Well, but you have to think about where that's going to dump the traffic, too. The Eastern Connector would be a way that if you were on 29 heading south towards Charlottesville, that you'd be able to cut east towards Pantops and then get on 64. So instead of having to come all the way to Charlottesville, take the bypass around Charlottesville, or what a lot of people in the city of Charlottesville fear is that if the Meadow Creek Parkway is built, that that will become the de facto path for people to get from 29 through the city to 64 so they can head to Richmond.
Of course,
so
it will.
The Eastern Connector is one.
Just like Rio Road is now. You get Rio Road down to the bypass and then head over towards Pantops in 64.
And the Eastern Connector, they're in the middle of a study about where to locate that road. Again, another huge funding challenge to actually build it. Right now, they've got enough funding to study it. and the study is underway. They're looking at cutting across at either Prophet Road, Polo Grounds Road, or through Penn Park, and then connecting over to Darden-Tow Park. The issue I think we have to keep an eye on, though, is that traffic then dumps onto 20, heading right into that 250 interchange right in the middle of Pantops.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that wouldn't work.
They are looking at making another bridge across the Ravanna, not only for the Eastern Connector, but also from the existing shopping center there, the Pantops Shopping Center, potentially building another bridge into the city. And that's something that'll be getting more discussion as we move forward. Before we go on, Coy, I do want to correct. I made a mistake in the rush on the last break. The number I gave for the Places 29 residential capacity, I gave a lower number. It should have been 71,400 as the ultimate build-out, meaning that's way beyond the 20 years. So I don't want anybody to panic thinking that 71,000 homes are coming our way. But
that is the number that the county has identified as what they could permit to be built on the in the 29 corridor.
Correct. The number I gave, 67,000, is what the current comprehensive plan would allow. The Places 29 master plan would allow some more density, therefore they're getting some more units. But again, that's the high water mark. The meeting I just left, they said to look at probably a mid-range number as far as ultimate build-out. And that might be more around 50,000. But again, even then, we're talking about 35,000 more housing units than we have today.
Yeah.
So it's
the long and the short of it is,
there's a lot of room for growth there.
If you plan on living in this area and retiring here, in 20 years, 30 years from now, this place is going to be two or three times as big in terms of people. There's just so many people who want to live here. There's a lot of very good developers here. It's a great market to be a developer. And right now, the county is, you know, arguably very pro-development. They're not insisting absolutely that the infrastructure be in place before they can permit development. And even Richmond won't necessarily allow them to insist that development be in place first. So these are good problems to have. These are the kind of problems you want. You don't want the kind of problems upstate New York is having where everybody's leaving. But these are problems nonetheless that we face as a community, these growth and development challenges.
I think what we've learned in the course of doing these master plans is that it's possible to get a lot more housing into these designated growth areas, and that includes the city of Charlottesville. We're seeing a lot of infill development and nine-story building proposals. That's one example of a way to get more people on the same square footage in a designated growth area.
We're talking growth and development with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. If you'd like to join this conversation, the phone number is 977-1070. Steve is on the line in Albemarle County, wants to make a comment about 64. Oh, ouch. Steve, you with us? Oh, we lost Steve. Hey, Brian, we were talking about, you know, paying for these roads and how, you know, there's no money for the Eastern Connector. There's just probably a few thousand dollars to study the Eastern Connector. Give us your thoughts from where you sit on this transportation plan that was approved in Richmond. Bob Gibson has written that there's really nothing in this plan for Central Virginia. And, you know, if you don't live in Northern Virginia or Hampton Roads, don't expect much from this transportation plan. And they seem to be pushing off the responsibility for paying for roads onto the localities, which, if I read it correctly, that means higher property taxes.
Well, that's one way it may turn out. I think we need to wait and see. I mean, the news right now does not look good. Dennis Rooker was quoted in the papers saying, you know, I don't see anything in there that's helpful. Rob Bell, one of our local legislators, said that he thought that the maintenance money would be helpful, and there might be some additional secondary road funds coming our way. We'll have to wait and see. It'll probably be several months. We'll have to see what Governor Kane does. I'm frankly not expecting a whole lot. And I think that sort of puts the ball squarely in our court. Local government is going to have to make some decisions. And you already see the County of Albemarle starting to address this on their own. They're putting this year about $2 million taking out of our current property taxes. They're taking $2 million and setting that aside for transportation projects. In the past, the state was paying for things like this.
Let's go back to the phones. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Carter, I believe this is Carter Myers on the line. Is that you?
Yes, Coy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in. What a wonderful opportunity. We were just talking about you in the last half hour. And,
well, if a good friend called me and said that you all discussed me on the air, and I thought maybe I'd come and just explain a little bit about that issue, and then any other questions you'd like. I spent eight and a third years on the transportation board, and
that would be wonderful. We were actually in the last half hour, the phrase the three-party agreement came up, which I hadn't heard that in years. And refresh people what this was and your experience with that.
Well, first let me say this: there was an accusation that I made a personal vote on interchange issue at Ryle Road, the three interchanges. Let me say that there were a lot of issues. There was another member from the community, Bill Ratterbush, who was on the board, transportation board. He actually represented the Culpeper District. I was an at-large member, statewide member. And the interchange issues were more complex in the fact that that was an alternative to building a bypass. And both of us favored eventually building a bypass, not creating a bypass through the center of Albemarle's commercial district. The vote with respect to those interchanges, before I voted first, I cleared everything with Attorney General's office, made sure that there was no conflict of interest. In some ways, it would probably have helped my business because the interchange was not going to impact me, but it was going to probably hurt some of my competitors. Secondly, if you built the interchanges, you weren't going to be able to bypass. Most people want to run more traffic by their front door, so for me to be in favor of a bypass was sort of the opposite of what you would expect. But I did clear all the votes. I made sure that there was a disclaimer that my business was located fairly near that area, but it was not going to be negatively impacted. But I did vote, and I voted against the interchanges because I don't think that was the appropriate place to run all the traffic permanently.
Right, right. Carter Myers is on the phone with us. Would you support those interchanges today?
I don't think so. I still think at some point in time you're going to need a bypass. It's more of a statewide issue than just a local issue. You're not going to solve the problem running all the traffic through the commercial district. Matter of fact, I think it's amazing people didn't realize how disruptive those interchanges would be because they're big interchanges. They have to be big for this size thing. It'd be very hard on local people getting on and off ramps to go to the mall, to go to local businesses. Some local businesses would have to be on the down ramp. And if you really looked at it closely, it was a very brutal decision to make for Charlottesville to Albemarle. It might work for the Lynchburg people to come through kind of an expressway right through the middle of the heart, but it was a bad decision. Bill Ratterbush and the board voted to do away with the interchanges, and actually we took a little bit of that money and built some sidewalks, which I think look nice and are used by some people, thank goodness.
Right, right.
And we did the trees, and I don't know what will happen to the bypass. They've let so much building take place at the other end that it probably hurts the possibilities. We looked at possibly extending the bypass out toward GE. Richmond was not, they didn't have the heart to go looking at that at the time. Should have done it a few years ago.
Mr. Myers, this is Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Yeah, Brian, how you doing?
Good. Question for you. One of the things I think we ought to point out is that they have scaled back the footprint of those interchanges. I believe it's called a SPUI design, and the one at Hydraulic and Rio, at Hydraulic and 29, I think would be smaller than maybe what some of the original ideas were. And then the other ones that currently the transportation planners are recommending to the county, and I haven't seen the detailed drawings, but they're even calling them overcrossings, such that they would not have the ramps, that if you wanted to make a turn onto the road that's flying above 29, you would take some other circuitous route, sort of a ring that would be around this overcrossing. So I think they are, I just want to point out, trying to look at creative ways to minimize the footprint, not have as many of those big ramps.
It wouldn't necessarily exactly look like what we have at the 250 bypass and Barracks Road, for example.
Right. Or a kind of cloverleaf design that most people probably think of on a big interchange.
Right, right.
One question I have, you suggested that the bypass was still needed, and one of the things I pointed out earlier in the program was that the transportation planners just told the County Planning Commission tonight that only 12% of the traffic on Route 29 is actually trying to get through and keep on going through Charlottesville.
Well,
and I think one of the things that keeps coming up is spending $250 million or more on a bypass to handle that 12% of the traffic. And I just wonder if you could reflect on that.
Let me comment. I heard those numbers all along, and I looked at the traffic running from Lynchburg to Charlottesville and the traffic on 29 that kind of ran up to Warrington. And then you've got some local traffic that would still use it. If you lived in North Garden going to the airport, you'd use it, and that's kind of local traffic, but would use the bypass. It was about 20,000 cars a day. So if you take Meadow Creek Parkway, if you build Meadow Creek and you pull 10,000 or 5,000 off there and you pull 20,000 on a bypass, you take about 25,000 cars a day off of existing 29. That's pretty significant. So when you look at the absolute numbers, it's significant. If you lived in Lynchburg and you had to go through this, you wouldn't like it. So it's really a statewide issue also. It's probably not that big a deal locally, whether you build interchanges or not. But ultimately, you know, 85, if you looked at 85 coming from Atlanta up through Greensboro, the politics of Richmond and Raleigh sort of took 85 towards the east. But it really should have run all the way up parallel with 29 to Washington. At some point in time, you're going to need a through road, whether it's built as a western bypass, whether it's built on some other avenue. But long term, you've got to move through traffic away from a commercial district. So It's not my worry anymore. I spent 8 years in fighting it and caught a lot of heat, and my wife used to catch a lot of heck from her friend. But it's not my issue anymore, but somebody's got to wrestle with that down the road.
Well, Coy was just asking me if help was on the way from Richmond in the form of this new transportation plan. Do you have any thoughts on what they've done?
Let me say one thing that I looked at and why I really got involved in transportation originally was all the effort was to fight the bypass. And so we lost a lot of money that could have been assigned for roads here because of our nobody wanted anything, and money got away from this area, and we're going to pay a price for years. So how are we going to get money? You got to get for something. We got to have a plan. We got to make Richmond realize that we're not going to just require them to redesign and redesign and redesign. We spent more money on planning, more money on studies. Somewhere or another, we got to get somebody to build something. I guess the one thing that's really been built around here is that Berkmaw Drive. They did a good job getting that going. We did get Airport Road improved, a gateway to the community. So, it's going to be a fight to get Richmond back in love with this area again and see if we can't get some money coming in. It's going to be difficult, but it's got to be some positives, not just negatives, anti-bypass.
Amen. Carter Myers on the phone. Thank you, sir, for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
See you. Good luck. Bye-bye.
All righty. And your thoughts, Brian, real quick?
Well, it was great to hear from Mr. Myers and get his perspective on it.
Absolutely.
You know, as far as getting the love from Richmond, I'm still skeptical. I think we are for a lot of things as a community. The community has come together in the form of through the Chamber of Commerce, through the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Lots of people worked on what's called the Transportation Funding Options Working Group, which in late 2005 presented some recommendations to the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is where the city and county come together and work on these transportation issues. And
in terms of planning, we're sort of doing everything that Richmond is saying, well, I wish everyone would do this. Well, that's what we're doing here in Central Virginia.
If they gave out money for having good plans, we would have so many roads here because we have some great plans. And
but paying for them is a different story.
So I don't think it's that, you know, Richmond is frowning upon us and not giving us our fair share. I think it's a statewide problem, and that's what we've seen discussed, all throughout this General Assembly session. And last year as well.
Well, one thing we definitely wanted to talk about today that we never got to was the whole idea of how to pay for all these road projects that are obviously needed, whether it's you could make a case for a bypass, you could make a case for the Eastern Bypass or a Southern Connector or, light rail on 29 out to the airport. You can make a case for all these things, but there's no money to do them and barely enough to study them. It doesn't look like we're going to get much in terms of money out of this transportation plan. So maybe next week when you join us, we can talk about what are the options we have at the local level to try to fund some of these things. For example, in Prince William County, they're floating their own bonds to pay for road projects. They're not waiting for Richmond to send the money. They're doing their own thing.
That's right.
Might we see something like that here in Central Virginia, see an initiative on a local level to fund some of these projects by selling some bonds and not raising property taxes through your roof?
I think we'll have to. And one of the unfortunate things is to do things like a gas tax. And a gas tax is where you're actually, charging the people using the roads. If you levy the tax there, then it's sort of, the person using pays for the roads. And that's not something we can raise on our own. We have to get permission from the General Assembly for the city or the county to levy a local gas tax. That's not something they've ever given us permission to do. They have, in the recent action by the General Assembly, given Northern Virginia and the Tidewater area permission to go raise their own taxes, but just in those localities.
Yeah. Brian Wheeler is the Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He joins us every Tuesday afternoon for a growth and development update and discussion. You folks have a great night. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk with Steve Safran of LostRemote.com on new media developments. And we'll get a local news roundup and discussion with Hawes Spencer of The Hook. All that and more tomorrow at 4 on Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.